Good morning, and we are live at the Houses of Parliament. We're not really, we're in my living room. Welcome back to the A-Level Politics Show, folks, and I'm really sorry for the long hiatus. It's been a really busy time for us politics teachers. We've been enjoying in-person teaching. Matthew is not here today. He will appear on a forthcoming episode, but in his absence, I will be talking or returning to the subject of the Conservative Party and whether it has abandoned New Right ideas and shifted towards One Nation conservatism under Boris Johnson. I felt it was really important to update the previous podcast that I'd published on this. That was back in September 2019, and Boris Johnson had just become the Conservative Party leader. And we weren't sure necessarily which direction he was headed. Later that year, of course, there was the December winter general election of 2019, and the Conservatives won an 80-seat majority. So I think 2 years past that now, with a global pandemic still raging, we need to return to this issue. And to answer this question, it is important to understand the beliefs of the new right and the beliefs of One Nation Conservatives, and then link current Conservative policies to those beliefs. So One Nation Conservatives, they believe that the rich have responsibility to the poor. They accept the need for the welfare state. They believe in something called the organic society. And this is the idea that local institutions such as the church and, say, libraries and other institutions that have been in the community for a long time bind society together. They believe in international diplomacy, and One Nation Conservatives tend to be pro-EU. They do encourage private enterprise, although they accept the need for a mixed economy. On the other hand, the New Right Conservatives believe that individual wealth should not be taxed. They are sceptical of welfare. They believe that it could lead to dependency on the state. The neoconservative component of the New Right have a respect for order, believe that there should be respect for order, so they advocate a strong police force. They are wary of immigration, they are anti-EU and more pro-America. The neoliberal component of the New Right believe in a limited state and they favour privatisation. The stronger essays acknowledge that the New Right is itself divided between neoliberals and neoconservatives. So just to repeat, neoconservatives believe in order and authority and believe that the state provides this. They believe in traditional values, so they may have been against gay marriage and so on. There is a wariness of outside influence, and they primarily focus on the structure of society and the political system. And that is why they can sit uneasily, perhaps, but they can sit next to neoliberals and call themselves jointly the New Right, because neoliberals primarily focus on the economy, whereas neoconservatives focus on society. So neoliberals believe in free markets and privatization. As I said, they believe that welfare can lead to dependency. They want a limited government, limited intervention in the economy. And so, therefore, we then need to take the New Right and sometimes target the neoliberals and look at a Conservative Party policy and decide whether that's neoliberal or neoconservative. It's not just a straight shoot-off between One Nation Conservatism and the New Right. We need to be specific about the kinds of beliefs and which component of the New Right we're talking about. So what is my direction? Well, I will be focusing, firstly, on the economy. And on the economy, I think it's clear that Boris Johnson has steered his party to a more One Nation approach. But the party remains divided in this area. And in most other areas, I'm going to be arguing that the party is probably more aligned still with the New Right. If the question is about recent Conservative policies as well, we have to define what recent is. So if recent is between 2019 and 2021, well, on the economy, I think it's fair to say there has been a lot of government intervention, especially during the COVID pandemic with the furlough scheme. And therefore that the Conservative Party is a One Nation party on the economy. But if recent means, let's say since 2010, when David Cameron became Prime Minister and then was superseded by Theresa May, then I think we can look at a whole raft of policies that cut government spending and limited intervention in the economy. And therefore, if we're talking about recent being from 2010, the picture is a little muddy. After the break then, we will really delve into the economy. We're also going to be looking at provision of services and welfare. We're going to be looking at international affairs and Brexit. We're going to be looking at civil liberties and rights of workers. We're going to be looking at law and order and immigration. We're going to be looking at social issues and the conservative approach to society. So stand by. Let's look at some evidence that the Conservative Party is new right on the economy. In his 2021 budget, Chancellor Rishi Sunak froze fuel duty and cut air passenger duty for internal flights. The 2019 manifesto promised not to raise national insurance contributions, VAT and income tax. And further back, David Cameron favoured lower public spending and proposed to cut another $25 billion of public spending in his 2014 Conservative Party conference speech. All of these policies fit in with the Thatcherite, New Right belief, the neoliberal belief that people should keep their wealth, that there should be limited state intervention, and that this goal is realised either through privatisation or through limited public expenditure. On the other side, the Conservative Party did not oppose the Labour government taking a controlling stake in banks struck by the credit crunch, including Northern Rock and RBS, about 12 years ago. Theresa May called for an industrial strategy that implies more government intervention. Indeed, The Spectator's James Forsyth described Theresa May as the most left-wing Tory Prime Minister in 40 years. I wonder if he would have considered Boris Johnson even more left-wing after it was announced that railway reform would include a new commercial model for train operators that would include some kind of state involvement. Chancellor Rishi Sunak announced a $170 billion investment programme in the 2020 budget. And in 2021, the party actually broke its campaign pledge not to raise national insurance and raised it to pay for the backlog in the NHS after COVID and going forward to plug the hole in social care. All of those policies fit with the One Nation belief of a mixed economy when it came to taking over those failing banks a decade ago. And also with the idea that the state needs to become involved in the economy. So what is my evaluation on the economy? Well, the global pandemic forced the Tories to adopt an even sharper One Nation stance. It introduced the furlough scheme to subsidise the wages of workers who were told to stay at home and whose businesses could no longer pay them. Granted, the party is divided between supporting a more limited government role in the economy and advocating a more active one, as debates over whether to prop up faltering energy companies in 2021 show. But Johnson has sided with state intervention over limited state intervention far more often than not. So on the economy, certainly in the last 2 years under the Johnson government, I think we can point to a more One Nation approach. Let's move on then to the provision of services and to welfare. David Cameron believed in giving greater control of services to charitable organisations and to local people. For example, the Conservatives proposed that GPs, rather than health authorities, take charge of their own budgets. The Coalition, between 2010 and 2015, sold off shares in the post office. The Tory manifesto in 2017 proposed cuts to free school meals. While that was not enacted, you can see the direction of travel. Cameron did not commit the party to meeting Labour's goal of halving child poverty by 2020. The party has instead focused a great deal on reducing benefits, especially housing benefit through the so-called bedroom tax, which will affect or does affect the poor far more than the rich and affects disabled people far more than the rich, because you get less housing benefit if you have a spare room. And often it's disabled people who have that, need that spare room for all the equipment that they may require. Theresa May proposed means testing for social care provision to include the value of a person's home. Now, while that so-called dementia tax, as it was labelled by the opposition, didn't come into fruition, the party still has attacked benefits. It reduced universal credit by £20 per week in October 2021. So these policies fit very neatly with the Thatcherite New Right belief that welfare can lead to dependency and that market-based solutions to service provision are preferable. Now, on the flip side to that, Cameron summed up his priorities in three letters, NHS. And yes, spending on health was ring-fenced. That means it was supposed to be protected from cuts under his administration. Boris Johnson suggested that local authorities could be allowed to increase council tax by an extra 2% in order to pay for care for the elderly. The 2019 manifesto spoke of levelling up per pupil funding for schools. And in the COVID pandemic, the debt that hospital trust accrued was written off. Boris Johnson also promised 20,000 more police officers and 50,000 more nurses. The 2021 budget, as I mentioned, delivered on that promise for a real terms increase in spending on education, but also for every government department. And these policies support, perhaps, the One Nation view of noblesse oblige, that the rich have responsibility to the poor, that taxes should rise, therefore, to provide for basic services. So what is my evaluation when it comes to welfare? Well, attitudes to welfare payments remain firmly New Right, but attitudes to public services have shifted as the underfunding of schools and hospitals have become more politically unacceptable. Nonetheless, until the country actually sees what levelling up is in practice, it is difficult to say for sure that New Right ideas have been abandoned in this area. Indeed, when we are looking at these promises of 20,000 police officers, we have to bear in mind that there were in 2019 around 20,000 fewer police as a result of the austerity measures introduced by Cameron and May. So whether this is just simply trying to catch up because of the New Right approach towards public services, or whether this is a permanent shift towards using the state to fund public services, is perhaps debatable. But what we have to see is, when it comes to benefits, the Conservative Party seems to be very much a neoliberal New Right party, believing still that welfare leads to dependency. Let's now turn to international affairs and Brexit. Many prominent Conservatives campaigned for Brexit. Johnson promised to get Brexit done in the 2019 general election. The Tories supported the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and believed that terrorism is a clear and present threat to the nation and that policy has to focus on tightening security. The party also announced a reduction in international development aid in 2021. Now, all these positions fit with Thatcher's dislike of the EU and her unwavering support for the US, plus perhaps a re-emphasis on hard power over soft power, the downplaying of diplomacy and helping poorer countries. On the flip side, many Conservative MPs opposed the reduction in international development aid, including Theresa May, the former Prime Minister. Most Tories voted and campaigned to remain in the EU. The party favours international trade with Commonwealth countries such as India, creating a new partnership with different countries now that the UK has left the EU. These positions fit in with a more internationalist stance of One Nation Conservatives of the past and a greater commitment to soft power, the commitment to focus on cash, coal, cars and trees at the COP26 summit on the environment in Glasgow in 2021 illustrated that the Conservative Party still wants to engage with the world and jointly find solutions to the world's problems, as opposed to going it alone or just following the United States, as the new writers often want to do. In evaluation then, the ongoing dispute with the EU over the Northern Ireland Protocol and the apparent disregard for concerns voiced by the international community over the Afghanistan troop rollout that was US-led but UK-followed suggests that the party is less internationalist and thus perhaps more neoconservative, certainly than it used to be under David Cameron and under previous prime ministers. Let's now turn to civil liberties and the rights of workers. The Conservatives passed the Trade Union Act 2016, which requires a turnout threshold for industrial action, thereby limiting the right to strike. The party promised to review the Human Rights Act after the 2019 general election and is looking at ways to limit judicial review that often leads to the challenging of government policy. Now, the trade union law that I mentioned builds on the anti-trade union policies of Thatcher and the New Right, which changed the employee-employer relationship in favour of the employer. Granted, Theresa May initially supported worker representation on company boards and a right of employees to be informed of the direction of their company, although neither measure went anywhere. The party announced proposals to increase the living wage to £10.50 an hour in its 2019 party conference. These policies appear to fit with the One Nation approach to manage employee-employer relations, which came to be known in the 1970s as corporatism or as negotiation. But in evaluation, while the Conservatives promised a high wage, high skilled economy, especially at its party conference in 2021, where that was the focus, there is little evidence that it is committed to legislation that would bring it about. On civil liberties, the party has tacked firmly to the New Right agenda, as shown by promises for tough sentences for protesters who block roads and who fell statues of slave traders. So therefore, on the rights of workers and civil liberties, I would argue that the party is still largely a New Right party. On immigration and law and order, there are a number of policies that have been introduced over the last decade suggesting that the party has firmly stayed or tacked towards the New Right agenda. Throughout the last decade, the party promised to reduce net migration to below 100,000 per year and did not initially, at least, guarantee the post-Brexit rights of EU citizens living in the UK. The party ended free movement of labour from EU countries. David Cameron suggested taking away passports of British citizens who became radicalised in Syria. The 2019 Queen's Speech contained bills to allow for extradition of suspected criminals who were in the UK but wanted by so-called trusted countries, and a sentencing bill that would push back automatic release points for violent and sexual offenders. In 2020, Home Secretary Priti Patel proposed a points-based immigration system to reduce unskilled migration. Boris Johnson promised to end the early release of those found guilty of terror-related offences after the London Bridge and Streatham attacks. New powers are to be given to the police to tackle unlawful protests, including increased prison sentences for those who prevent traffic. So these policies all fit with the New Right belief in a strong, or the neoconservative belief in a strong police force and in respect for order. And for perhaps people knowing their place in the hierarchy, it also points to the wariness of outside influence. Now, granted, David Cameron favoured rehabilitation instead of punishment for drug addicts. Former Justice Secretary Ken Clark believes that the numbers of prisoners should be reduced as it costs too much money to house them all. Theresa May warned the police about the overuse of stop and search against the black community. Boris Johnson has promised to continue to pass the domestic abuse bill, which was held up in 2019 due to the suspension of Parliament. These policies fit with the One Nation belief in compassionate conservatism and perhaps greater social liberalism and acceptance of multiculturalism. What is the evaluation on immigration and Law and Order. If anything, the party has moved further to the right on these issues since Johnson became Prime Minister and Priti Patel became Home Secretary. The sheer raft of policies that I have listed in the New Right column attests to that fact. Finally then, let's look at social issues and the Conservative Party's approach to society more generally. In 2010, David Cameron proposed the married couples tax allowance. Now, critics said that this was essentially paying mothers to stay at home and look after their children. This policy fits with the Thatcherite preference for traditional values. Most Conservative MPs voted against gay marriage. And Thatcher said that some people think they have the inalienable right to be gay. That is an actual quote. So she was questioning whether people are actually born gay. And she's reflecting perhaps those traditional values and the dislike of alternative lifestyles. She famously said that there is no such thing as society, only individuals and their families. And many Tories support that. But Cameron himself supported the big society, which is the idea that local volunteers take over some services, maybe park maintenance or library services. Many Tories voted in favour of allowing same-sex unions. It was David Cameron that promoted them, and Theresa May also supported them. And David Cameron updated Thatcher's quote on society, saying that there is such a thing as society. It's just not the same thing as the state. So these ideas and these policies fit in with the one nation belief, perhaps, of an organic society whereby local institutions, maybe village halls and churches, are the glue that hold the nation together. They also point to greater social liberalism, which is present in the party perhaps now, but certainly not so much when Thatcher was leader. So after the break, we'll be looking at the overall evaluation on whether the Conservative Party is a New Right party or a One Nation party. Johnson is a One Nation Conservative on economic matters, but not on much else. He calls himself a libertarian when it comes to individual freedom, not particularly liking those lockdowns, but still invokes the New Right playbook when it comes to inciting culture war. Describing women who wear the hijab as looking like letterboxes is one such example. Now, you may say that he did that before he was Prime Minister, but he's never properly apologised. The New Right often calls for an end to so-called political correctness. What this often means is that they want to be free to be offensive, as Johnson has a track record of doing so. His government uses the language of the New Right when it comes to immigration, and he has policies that match that. Indeed, he has the personnel to match New Right beliefs. Nadine Dorris has been promoted as Culture Secretary, and Priti Patel is Home Secretary. Granted, the party is divided, as the Tories have become competitive in former Labour strongholds, the so-called Red Wall constituencies. There is greater pressure to appeal to a completely different set of voters. And that's led to a schism between Tories in the South, who advocate for less spending and fewer taxes, and those of the Red Wall constituencies, who argue that the party can only stay competitive in those areas if voters see what levelling up actually means. The Conservatives are, and probably always will be, a divided party, but one that will unite around a winner and follow that winner if they continue to look like they will win. Margaret Thatcher's New Right policies were supported by the party until she became an electoral liability. Johnson's economic policies are at the moment supported, but once he is perceived less as a winner, the pendulum may shift to a rival who advocates perhaps lower taxes and lower spending. Perhaps it is too early to say that definitely the Conservative Party has shifted to the One Nation approach, partly because the last decade has been one of cuts to public services. So we would need to see a sustained commitment to public spending and higher taxes, perhaps over the next decade, to really say for sure that the Conservative Party has shifted to a one nation approach. I will leave it there. I hope you enjoyed this podcast and found it useful. Do check out our earlier recordings and earlier podcasts and look out for future ones. Thank you to all of those who have tweeted me suggesting topics. We will return to the United States very shortly. I recognise we haven't recorded one on the US for a while and on political ideologies. It's on my to-do list. Until next time, take care, stay safe, bye-bye.